Today we're beginning here two lines down on the top of Tzadi Perem and Aleph. We're continuing the Agadita with regards to Yaakov's fight with the Malach. And in Hosea, the pasuk says, "Vayasar el Malach, vayuchal b'chavit chaneinlo." So "Vayasar" comes from the word "sar," which means to lord over, to rule over. And the question in the pasuk, which the Gemara is going to discuss in 1 second, is: it's not clear whether the Malach is the subject or the object of the pasuk. When it says "Vayasar el Malach," does it mean that there's an unspoken subject, which is Yaakov ruled over the Malach? Or is Vayasar el Malach over Yaakov, which means that the Malach is the subject and the object is the unspoken object of Yaakov? Vayuchal, he succeeds, Bacha v'itchanenlo, he cried for mercy, v'itchanenlo, and pleaded with him. Eni yodea mina sesar demi. The pasuk is unclear as to Vayasar, who is the one that's lording over, who's the one that was victorious in this wrestling match. Shumer kisarita im Elukim. When the pasuk says that you have fought or lorded over Elukim, have Omer Yaakov nasis sar lamalach. Because there, the compliment to Yaakov is that you have successfully ruled over Elukim. Elukim here is a reference to the Malach. And therefore you see that Yaakov was victorious. Bachavit chanenlo. And again, there's an unspoken subject and object here. So who cried to whom? Shomer Bayomer Shalcheini from the Pasuk in Bereishit, when Malach says to him, please send me away. Aviomer Balach Bakali Yaakov. That the Malach is crying to Yaakov to release him, to let him go. Kisarita im Elukim v'im Anashim. You have successfully ruled over, been victorious with Elukim in Anashim. Amaraba Remez Ramazlo. This was a hint to Yaakov. They're going to be two rulers that are going to come forth from him. Rosh Golash Bavel, the exilarch in Bavel, Vinasish be'eretz Yisrael, and the prince or the leader of the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. Now the truth is, it's not clear from the pasuk which one is Elohim and which one is Anashim. Rashi claims that Nasish be'eretz Yisrael, Nasi in Eretz Yisrael shesmuchimim, that they have smicha, therefore they're called Elohim. Because the pasuk says in the Torah, Ad Elohim yavod var shnehem. Over there, Elohim, the Gemara interprets to be Dayanim smuchim. That when you have smicha, then you gain the elevated status of being called Elohim. In the Torah, the word Elohim is used both to mean Dayan, someone of power, as well as Elohim to mean God. And there's a lot to say about using the interchangeability of that. But here in the pasuk of Elohim, we're seeing it as a Dayan. If that's the case, then the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael would be the Elohim. V'im Anashim is Rosh Gola. Because the Rosh Gola was someone who was appointed by the authorities in Bavel, as well as by the people. So his power comes from the social context and the political power streams in Bavel, versus the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, whose power, in a sense, comes from his smicha, the Mesorah, and his being an Elohim. The truth is that the Netziv wants to say just the opposite, and that is that the Anashim is a statement of being self-made, versus Elohim means to be an appointment of power. And therefore he wants to suggest that the Rosh Golah, Bavel, was the Elohim, because his power derived from appointment and his status politically, whereas the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael were, quote-unquote, self-made. More of their power derives from their erudition and their Limud HaTorah, rather than a political appointment, because they weren't necessarily recognized by the political authorities in Eretz Yisrael. It was an internal leadership for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The benefit of saying that is because then it flows with the Gemara, which is that the Gemara says Rosh Gola, then Nasi Shub Eretz Yisrael. And then that would match with Elohim and Anashim, versus the way that Rashi does it, which is it's reversed. Which is Elohim is a reference to the Nasi, and the Anashim is a reference to the Rosh Gola, and that's inverted from what the Gemara says. So, Mikan Ramazlo Galut. And from there, you see that he hinted to him about the Galut, the fact that you need a Rosh Gola, and a Nasi Shberetz Yisrael already indicates that there's going to be a Galut. Ubegefen Shlosha Sarigim. So here we're speaking about the dream of the butler by Yosef when he's in prison. And it says there that the grapevine has three tendrils extending from it. Amar b'chibav, amar rav. Elu gimel sarei ge'im ayotzim Yisrael b'chol dor v'dor. These are the three, either wealthy individuals, or politically connected individuals that come out of Klal Yisrael in each generation. Pamim she'shnayim kan ve'chad be'eretz Yisrael. Sometimes two of them are by us in Bavel, and one of them is in Eretz Yisrael. Pe'amim she'shnayim be'eretz Yisrael ve'chad kan. And sometimes there are two of them in Eretz Yisrael and one over here. Meaning that there are winds that shift the political leadership of Klal Yisrael. And these individuals who are the great supporters and leaders of Klal Yisrael, the question of whether there's one or two found in either Bavel or Eretz Yisrael, but for a total of three. Reviyu Rabbanan Einayu b'Rabbanan Ukva b'Rabbanan Nechemya b'nei Brati d'Rav. And the Chachamim looked in Bavel at the grandchildren through the daughter of Rav, Rabbanan Ukva and Rabbanan Nechemya, as being those representatives of those two individuals in that time period in Bavel. So they were those types of individuals that are described here by the Pasuk. Rav Amar, Eile Shlosha Sarei Goyim, Shem Lamdim Zuchut Al Yisrael B'chol Dor B'dor. These are the three non-Jewish princes that learn or speak of the merits of Klal Yisrael in each generation. Rashi, interestingly enough, says, Gimel Sarei Goyim, Malachim. These are ministering angels. Not just political leaders who are favorably inclined towards the Klal Yisrael. These are ministering angels that are speaking up in defense of Klal Yisrael. And that's what it means, Sarei Goyim. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, now they're going to darshan the words in that pasuk that's found by Yosef in the dream of the butler. Gefen Zehaulam. Gefen is a reference to the world. Shlosha Sarigim, Zeabram Yitzchak V'Yakov. The three tendrils is a reference to the Avot, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. V'hi koporachat altanitza, it was budding, and then altanitza, its blossom came, Elohim Ahot. Those are the mothers, meaning Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea. Hivshilu eshkelote anavim, and then the clusters ripened into grapes, Elo ashvatim. Those are the 12 shvatim, the 12 sons of Yaakov. Amalo Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Eliezer, I don't think that's the way to explain this agadah or this pasuk. Does a person have a dream about the past? The point of the dream is to give you information about the future. That's why he approaches Yosef to get an interpretation of the dream to understand what its predictive value is. So you, Rabbi Eliezer, are talking about things that already happened in the past. It's the time of Yosef. It's a Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the Imahot, the Shvatim, everything's already done. What's he dreaming about that's indicative of the future when your whole interpretation is about the past? So therefore he says, Ela, Gefen ze Torah, Nimshala Torah, the Gefen, which we're going to see later on from the Pasuk in Tehillim, Shlosha Sarigim, Ela, Moshe, Aaron, v'Miriam, the three tendrils are the three leaders that are going to be of the generation in Mitzrayim and then leaving to the Midbar, which are Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. V'hi kaporach alta nitza, Elu Sanhedrin. Those are the elders or the leaders of the courts. Hivshilu eshkelote anavim, Elu tzadikim shebichol dor vador. Those are the righteous in each generation. Amar Rabbi Gamliel, Adayin tzrichim the modai. Even though Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua gave their interpretations, we still need the explanation of Rabbi Elazar HaModai, demukim lei kulei b'chad makom. Because he's at least consistent thematically in his explanation of this pasuk, which is Rabbi Elazar HaModei Omer, Gefen ze Yerushalayim. That's a reference to the future, obviously, but Yerushalayim. Shlosha Sarigim ze Mikdash Melech v'Kohen Gadol. That's the points of leadership, the points of Hashrat HaShchinah in the future. The Mikdash, the king, and the Kohen Gadol. V'hi koporachat alta nitza elu pirchei kuna. Those are the young Kohanim that are presiding over the Mikdash. Hivshilu eshkelote anavim, elu nitzachim. Those are the wine libations. So he has it referencing all to the Mikdash and Yerushalayim of the future and the future leadership of Klal Yisrael. Yeshua ben Levi mukim la b'matanot. Yeshua ben Levi sets up the pasuk to be a reference to the great things that Hashem gifted us. Damrei Yeshua ben Levi, gefen zu Torah. Again, he says Gefen is a reference to the Torah. Shlosha Sarigim Ze Be'er Amud Anan Uman. Those are the three gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in the Midbar, in the Zchut of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So he's not far off of what Rabbi Yeshua said, that it's a reference to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Here it's just a reference to the gifts that were given for the benefit of Miriam, which is the Be'er, the Amud Anan is Aaron, and the Mon, which is in the school of Moshe. Vehi keporach al tanitza, elu ha-bikurim. That's a reference to the Bikurim, which Rashi says, interesting enough, Sheikhnisam the Eretz Tovah, Hashem brought them, and Moshe Aaron and Miriam led them to this great land that is full of peirot, umevim imenu bikurim, v'prichat gmar bishulam, that they bring the bikurim to the Mikdash after they already ripened. That's what it means, kiporachat alta nitza, which is a reference to the bikurim that will come from the blossoms, and that which are on the tree, which is interesting just because the lashon of the Mikra Bikurim in Parshat Kitavo, when you bring up the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, to the Mikdash, when you make the decoration of the Bikurim, the reason that you bring the Bikurim is because you're giving thanks to Hashem for giving you the land of Israel. So even though you're bringing up the Bikurim, you're not saying thank you for the Bikurim, you're saying thank you for the land that you gave me that produces all this great produce. V'vienu l'makom hazeh, v'itan lanu et ha'aretz hazot eretz zavat chalav u'dvash, v'ata hine veiti et reshit pri adama asher natata li Hashem, v'nechto lifnei Hashem lokecha, v'ishtachavit lifnei Hashem lokecha. So you say, I'm bringing the reshit pri adama because you brought us to this great land, this eretz zavat chalav u'dvash, which is exactly what's being described in Rashi over here, that the Bikurim are about, Yichnisanu le'eretz tovah umle'a peirot, that you brought us into this great land that produces this, and therefore it's a matana. The matana is not the bikurim, the matana is the land that produces the bikurim. Yivshilu eshkalotat ha'navim, that its clusters of grapes are ripened, elu nisachim. That's a reference to the wine libations, which again, in this interpretation, is a gift from Hashem. The wine of Eretz Yisrael and the produce of Eretz Yisrael is an indication of what Hashem gifted us in terms of the land of Israel. Rabbi Yirmi Rabba Amar, Geffen, Elu Yisrael. Geffen is a mashal to Klal Yisrael. Mechenu Omer. And we have the Pasuk in Tehillim that says, Geffen mi Mitzrayim tasia. That the Geffen from Mitzrayim you will take out. You will bring out. Well, the Geffen, there's obviously a reference to Klal Yisrael. Shlosha Sarigim, Elu Shlosha Rigalim, Shisrael Olim Behem, Bechol Shana Veshana. That's a reference to the regalim, the three times a year that Bnei Israel are ole l'regel that come up to Shalayim. Vehi kiporachat alta nitza, higiyaz manam shel Yisrael lifrot ulirbot. When Bnei Israel and in Mitzrayim, the clock has come, the time has come for them to start growing from a family into a nation. V'cheinu omer, u'Bnei Israel paru v'yishritzu, v'yirbu v'yishritzu b'mod mod. They start to populate, or the population expands in Mitzrayim in an exponential manner inside of Mitzrayim. Alta nitza, higiyaz manam shel Yisrael liyigael. So that's why the gears are changed by the Bach, is that the previous one is v'hi kiporachat, and then he says alta nitza is a separate point here, which is that when the blossom came is when the time for Bnei Yisrael to leave Mitzrayim had come. Chenu omer, v'yeyez nitzcham al bigadai, v'chol mabushai eg'alti. Eg'alti really means migu'al. It was disgusting that their blood or their victory splattered all over my clothing, and all my clothing was disgusting. That's the pashupshat of the pasuk. But they're learning the word eg'alti rather than being disgusting as being ge'ula. And that's what it means, ve'ez nitzcham al bigadai, that the word nitzcham is a play on nitza, which is a reference to their strength or their lifeblood. And Hashem is saying that he will smash their lifeblood and their strength and then take Bnei Israel out. And even though in Yeshayahu it's a reference to Edom, the mashal that's there is about Dorech Bagat, that you are pressing them, pressing the grapes in the press. And that's what Hashem's going to do to destroy these nations. And same thing over here, v'yaz nitzcham al bigadai, that their blood and their strength will be splattered all over my clothing, v'chol mabushai egalti, and all of my clothing will be soiled, but not soiled here, but egalti is ge'ula. And so the idea being that the nitza, the blossom or the redemption that our Bnei Israel will feel, and therefore the nitza and the nitzcham is a play on the redemption of Bnei Israel from Mitzrayim, where Hashem will destroy Mitzrayim.
Ishtilu eshkolota anavim, and their clusters of the grapes ripened.
It was time for Mitzrayim to drink their cup of retribution, their cup of poison, because of all they had done to Klal Yisrael. The time had come for them to drink the cup. There are three cups that are mentioned in the dream by the butler of Kos Paro. So that Kos that's mentioned three times, what is the meaning of that? Echad Shishata Bimei Moshe. They are all the cups of retribution, the cups of revenge and poison that Mitzrayim will drink because of what they have done. One time was in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu when Bnei Israel leave Mitzrayim. Echad Shishata Bimei Paro Necho. And the other one is in the time of Paro, which is the time period of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, whereby Paro wants to go north to fight against Babel, and Yoshiyahu goes out to stop him because he believes that he shouldn't cross through the land of Israel. The Nevi'ah told him that he should just let it go and not interfere with him. Yoshiyahu was killed in that battle in Megiddo with Paro, and that's one of the prakim that we say in Eicha on Tisha B'Av, as well as the keynote that we say by Yekoneh Yirmiyahu with Yoshiyahu. That kina references to this event where Yoshiyahu Melech goes out, and even though all the great things that he had done, he makes this one mistake and is killed by Paro. That's obviously not what the reference is to over here, but rather to a point later on, post the Korban, where the people who remain behind after the conquest of Eretz Yisrael and the destruction of the Mikdash by Nebuchadnezzar, there is a remnant of Jews that are left in Eretz Yisrael. Then there's the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam, and now the Jews that are remaining there are scared that Nebuchadnezzar is going to come back and take retribution on them because they killed his appointment to the kingship in Eretz Yisrael. So they come to Yirmiyahu Navi seeking advice and ask him, should we stay here or should we go down to Mitzrayim to escape the wrath of Nebuchadnezzar? Because at this point, Babel has yet to reach Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is still an independent empire, or what's left of their empire. They are independent. So they're asking Yirmiyahu for advice. They say, whatever you tell us, we'll do. So Yirmiyahu says, stay here. Don't go there, because Mitzrayim is about to be destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. It's going to be flattened to the ground like you've never seen before. The people say, we said we were going to listen to you, Yirmiyahu, but we're going to Mitzrayim. And they leave anyway for Mitzrayim. And in the end, Nebuchadnezzar reaches Mitzrayim. He never comes back to destroy or attack the people in Eretz Yisrael, but rather goes and destroys Mitzrayim. And so those that went down to Mitzrayim in the end are killed or destroyed, rather than those that stayed behind, like the advice of the Navi. So that's the reference there to the destruction of Mitzrayim at that point. And one for the future, where Mitzrayim will drink another cup of retribution in the future, like all the other nations that are persecuting or hurting Bnei Yisrael. Amarle Rabbi Abba, the Rabbi Yirmiyahu Baba, ki dorish lehu, the Rav, lahani krai bagadata, kabateich dorish lehu. When Rav used to darsh in these psukim, when he was teaching Agadata, he was doresh them like you did. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba explained it before about dealing with Yitziat Mitzrayim. So Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, umazo kegefen nimshala. We are compared to a gefen, to a grapevine. Zmurot sheba, the branches that come out of the grapevines, elu balei abatim. Those are the regular folk that are part of Klal Yisrael. Rashi describes them over here. Just like these branches of the vines, they produce the shoots and the leaves and the grapes. And they're the primary part of the gefen. The balei batim, the regular individuals who are adherents to the laws of the Torah, learn Torah, also work, and are supportive of Klal Yisrael, they are gomlei chesed. They take care of their brethren. Umachzikim yedeaniim, they support those that are impoverished. Umefrazrim imonam lemalchut, and they pay taxes bishvil acheihem, even for those that can't afford it. In those days, taxes were assigned to a region or to a city, and then they had to collect it from whomever could pay in the city. So here, they are the ones that pay those taxes. Mitzkamim ayadam, they're the basic support, or the underlying support for Klal Yisrael. The regular balei batim, they're the ones who are the ikar part of Klal Yisrael, because they're the ones that provide the support for everyone else, and they provide that which is the base and the most important part of Klal Yisrael. Eshkelot sheba elu tamidei chachamim. The clusters of grapes are the tamidei chachamim, which is the goal and the ultimate product of all that's done here, the grapes, which are those that are Osek Betorah, Alim Sheba, the leaves on it, Elu Amei Aretz. These are the Amei Aretz, and Rashi over here describes the Amei Aretz, that they are the leaves, because they protect the fruit that's underneath. Shalo Yakem Shrav, B'Shemesh V'Ruchot. They will not be hurt by the heat waves and the rays of the sun and the wind. Kach, so do Amei Aretz, Choshim V'Zorim V'Kotzrim. They're asuk in the basic produce, staple products of the economy. Samasha Tildami Dechim Ochlim. They produce what the Tamidei Chachamim need to eat. So they're essential to the survival of the Tamidei Chachamim. Not because they're necessarily providing the monetary support, but they're the ones who produce the basic staple products by which the economy functions. And even though they're not Asuk Batorah, and even though they are just Amei Aretz, literally, who work the land and just produce, nevertheless, they're essential to the survival of the Tamidei Chachamim. Just like the leaves, they're not the primary product of the grapevine, but nevertheless, they protect the grapes and allow the grapes to grow, so too the Amei Aretz. Knukanot, the tendrils of the grapevines, Elu Rekanim Shev Yisrael. Those are the empty ones in Klal Yisrael, meaning that they're not productive in any way. They're not part of the Tamidei Chachamim, they're not part of the Amei Aretz, and they're certainly not Balei Abatim, so they're empty of anything, just like the tendrils of the grapevine are useless and don't provide anything. So too, they're just taking without giving anything back, because they grow off of these roots of the Balei Abatim, but they don't do anything that's helpful or productive to help out the remainder of society. That's what they sent from Eretz Yisrael to Babel. The clusters should daven for the leaves. If it's not for the leaves, then the clusters of grapes would not survive or would not succeed and not flourish. So just like in the grapevine, the leaves are facilitators of the grapes growing and succeeding and flourishing, so too the Amei Aretz are the facilitators of the Tamidei Chachamim. And again, even if there's no direct correlation between them, they're not necessarily supporting the Tamidei Chachamim like the Balei Abatim, but nevertheless, they are providing the staple products and the food source for the Tamidei Chachamim. And if you don't have these Amei Aretz that are producing and providing that economic stability and providing the basic needs of the Tamidei Chachamim. Again, not that they're giving it to them gratis. The Tamidei Chachamim are paying for it, but without them, the Tamidei Chachamim have nothing to eat. And therefore, you should ask for Rachamim, for the Amei Aretz, in order to have that support for the Tamidei Chachamim. So now we move to another pasuk in Hosea, which says, Bechreha li bichamisha asar kosef. And I purchased her, meaning the zonah that Hashem tells Hosea to go out and purchase and to marry. So he purchased her for myself with 15 silver coins. Am Rabbi Yochanan Mishun Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadak. En kira elo lashon mechira. The kira over here does not mean to dig or excavate, which is the meaning or the pashut meaning of the word. Rather, it means to purchase. Shenebar, and the proof to that or evidence of that, is in Yaakov Avinu when he's describing to Yosef that he wants to be buried in Marat HaMachpelah. He says, "Bekivri asher karitali, the kever, the grave that I karitali. Karitali can mean I dug for myself, or can mean that I purchased." And we know that Chazal tell us that Yaakov Avinu purchased his right to the Marat HaMachpelah, either in his purchase of the Bechorah, or later on when he comes back from Lavan and he gives the monies and the gifts to Esav, that was, again, maybe to acquire the Marat HaMachpelah. So Sherakiritali means that I acquire. So Hashem says, Bechamisha Asar, on the 15th, Zet Tetvav Nisan, that's the 15th of Nisan. Shebo Nigalu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim, that was when they were redeemed from Mitzrayim. So it says, Vekrali, I purchased for myself, Bechamisha Asar, on the 15th of Nisan, means on the time that I took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, that's when I purchased them for me. Kesef Elu Tzadikim, I acquired for myself, or I gathered for myself, the tzaddikim, that's the reference of kesef. B'cheinu Omer, how do I know that kesef is a reference to the tzaddikim? Tzroa kesef lachach miyado, loma kese yavo beito. They took the bundle, the pouch of kesef, and went off with it, and he's saving it for the yoma kese, the special, unique day, he'll bring it back to the house. So it's almost as if Hashem walked off with the tzaddikim and keeps them in reserve for the day that they are needed, or he'll bring them back. And that's what the kesef over here is a reference to the tzaddikim. Chomer se'orim veletech se'orim. It's a continuation of the pasuk in Hosea. Chomer se'orim, which is the equivalent of a kur, 30 sa'ah. The letech is half a kur, which is 15 sa'ah, for a total of 45 sa'ah. Elu memhei tzadikim shalom mitkayim behem. These are the 45 tzadikim in each generation who are sustaining the world. Ve'eni yodea im shloshim kan v'tetva be'eretz Yisrael. I don't know if 30 of them are found here in Bavel. 15 in Eretz Yisrael. Im shloshim be'eretz Yisrael v'tetva kan. 30 in Eretz Yisrael and 15 here. Similar to what we saw before with the shlosha geim, the three leaders or politically connected individuals. Two of them were in Bavel, one in Eretz Yisrael, or vice versa. So to over here, these 45 tzaddikim, 45 total, seemingly 15 in one place, 30 in the other place, because that's the way the pasuk divides them, into a kor and a letech, which is half a kor. Kushu omer, ve'cha shloshim kesef, v'shlich oto beit Hashem el ha-yotzer. Now, the explanation of yotzer over here doesn't mean to the creator, but rather to the otzar, to the treasury over there. Hashem instructs to go and take those monies and throw them into the treasuries of the Mikdash. That's Makriya, that it's going to be 30 tzaddikim in Eretz Yisrael and 15 in Chutz La'aretz, because he took the Shloshim, which represent the 30, and he put it into the treasuries of the Mikdash, which means they're going to remain there. And that means Eretz Yisrael will have the 30 and the 15 will be in Chutz La'aretz. Amar Abayi, Virubayu, Mishtakache, Gabi, Bebek Nishta, the Tute Apto. The majority of these individuals are found in the shul under Apto. Now this could be a reference to a particular place, which means it's the shul of Apto, whichever this place is. They're found there. Or Tute Apto could be under the awning or upper chamber, upper level, which means in both cases, they're nondescript. These aren't the people that you see on the Mizrach wall. These aren't the people who are sitting in the front of the shul. These are the quiet, nondescript individuals. They're the ones that are the tzaddikim of the generation. And don't look for them in all those popular and leadership people. You're going to find them in the quiet, nondescript people. That's where these tzaddikim are found. And that's what it says. V'omer aleihem, im tov b'neichem havu schari. If it's good in your eyes, if you're happy, pay me my wages. If not, just pull away or leave me alone. It's part of the mashal of what Zechariah is seeing in his nevuah over there, that he's tending to the tzon of these individuals, and then he wants to get paid by these individuals, and he says to them, pay me for the work that I have done. If not, just leave me alone. And then they paid him the reward of the shloshim kesef. Why did they pay him 30 silver coins? These are the 30 tzaddikim of the other nations that sustain the other nations. So we have 45 tzaddikim that sustain Klal Yisrael, 30 of which are in Eretz Yisrael. It's a reference to the tzaddiki umot olam that sustain the umot olam. In the mashal there, where it looks like Hashem is breaking a covenant with whomever, and that covenant that's being broken, he's saying, give me back that money that I have given to you. The money's representing the tzaddikim, meaning that if we don't do what we're supposed to do, Hashem's going to demand back the 30 tzaddikim that provide the schar, the sustenance for us. And that is the evidence of the fact that there are always these 30 tzaddikim amongst Klal Yisrael, at least in Eretz Yisrael. Another interviewer thinks in speaking about the non-Jews, as Rashi says over here, that Hashem is breaking his covenant with the other nations with regards to the 30 tzaddikim he gave them to sustain them, and he's asking for the 30 tzaddikim back. That's what's represented by the payment of the 30 shekel kesef over here. The other thing to note over here is that the Gemara over here says that there are 45 tzaddikim in each generation, that the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Mem Hei Amud Bet mentions that there are 36 tzaddikim. And there's another medrash that says, Ko yeh zarecha, by Avraham Avinu yeh is 30. It says that there are 30 tzaddikim in each generation. So you have to obviously differentiate. That's already somewhat done by the Gemara in Sukkah, because the Gemara in Sukkah says that Lamed Vav Tzaddikim Shemekablim Pnei Ashkina. So those tzaddikim are unique in the fact that they are mekabel bnei shkina. That might differentiate them from the tzaddikim here, which says that these are the 45 tzaddikim shemit kaimim behem klal Yisrael, that they sustain klal Yisrael. There's a different objective of these tzaddikim, but those tzaddikim are a different description, and that might be the difference between them. There might be overlap, maybe some of them are the same, but there are certain tzaddikim that are sustaining klal Yisrael. There are also certain tzaddikim that are mekabel bnei shkina. So you could differentiate between those, and you'd have to say something similar for Avraham Avinu, where it says koyezarecha, that there are 30 tzaddikim. You also have to then differentiate that from the 36 or the 45, unless you say those 30 are a subset of these 45, because these 45 were divided between 30 and 15, and that's a reference to the 30 that are in Eretz Yisrael. Ulo amar elu shloshim mitzvot shekiblu ahem b'nei Noach. These are the 30 mitzvot that the B'nai Noach accepted upon themselves, Vein Makaimim Elishlosha. But even after accepting 30, they only perform 3 of them. And these are the 3 that they perform. Achad Shein Kodvim Ktubal Zacharim. Even though they are steeped in homosexuality, and they do practice it and live together, nevertheless, they were never so brash as to make it into something that they wrote a Ktubah about. They didn't write marriage licenses for these relationships or these partners. So Hashem gives them credit for not making it to a public issue. Obviously, that's gone by the wayside today because they've now done that as well. The other thing is that they don't sell dead flesh in the marketplaces. Now, Rashi over here gives 2 interpretations. One is that they don't take the human deceased, they do not sell them openly out in the marketplaces, which is that this is some form of cannibalism by which they do eat the flesh of human beings, but they are embarrassed enough or respectful enough that they don't sell it in the open shuk. It's something that they do quietly on the side. That's how Rashi explains it. Vani shamati, and Rashi gives an alternative, basar hamet. Basar is from a animal that died, that they don't sell that in the shuk. Even though they do eat meat from animals that died, they don't do it in a public forum. They don't do it in a way that publicizes what otherwise would be considered to be something that was not appropriate or something that would not be mutar to them. So now, interestingly, about both of these descriptions, one is that the fact that they were cannibalistic, but they didn't do it in the shuk. The Gemara in Menachot Chafter Amud Bet, when it describes what happened to Rabbi Akiva, when Moshe Rabbeinu sees Rabbi Akiva in the future and he says, why are you giving the Torah on my hands? Why don't you give it through Rabbi Akiva? And then Moshe asks Hashem, that's his Torah Maschara. Show me the reward for Rabbi Akiva. And he sees Rabbi Akiva being stripped of his skin by the Roman hot iron rakes. And he says, Zu Torah, Zu Schara. This is Torah, this is the Schar. And Hashem says, you have to be silent. That's what Allah Talifanai. Over there, the story continues and says that the basar of Rabbi Akiva was then sold in the shuk. So that's very interesting, given the fact that over here they said that one of the things they upheld was not selling it in the shuk. And thereby Rabbi Akiva, not only do they scrape off his skin with the iron combs, they end up selling his basar in the shuk, which would be a violation of what's mentioned here. On the other side, which is meit beima, that you're not allowed to eat in a veila, this is a question that is debated by the Rishonim. The Baal Yad Tosafot mentioned the fact that, according to the Torah, basar was only mutar lebnei Noach, not to Adam HaRishon. And that's because it says that both of you can eat that which vegetation is out there, and I've given you the vegetation to eat, but I haven't given you the animals to eat. The Baal Yad Tosafot over there speculate that's only the fact that you're not allowed to kill an animal for the basar to eat it. But if the animal died by itself, you would have been allowed to eat the basar. So according to him, Adam HaRishon could eat meat. He just couldn't kill animals to eat meat. He could only eat animals that were dead. On the other hand, B'nai Noach are given permission even to kill animals for their basar. That's the way the Baal Yad Tosafot would read it. If that's the case, then this interpretation of Rashi would be very difficult because it's saying that the basar ha-meit was nitar lahem. On the other hand, there are others that believe that when it comes to the basar v'neveila, it was asur to Adam HaRishon. Just like when you kill the animal, it would be asur, so if the animal died, you would not be able to eat the basar. In that vein, then it would be that it was asur to them. And when B'nai Noach were allowed to take basar, it was only if you killed the animal, we were allowed to eat the basar. But the animal died by itself, you would not be able to eat the basar. So So again, even though they violated that, they didn't do it publicly and sell it in the shuk. It's an interesting isur because it's not very clear where the isur derived from in terms of isur nevela. And the last thing is v'chad shemechabdin et haTorah. And the third thing that they keep is that they give respect or honor towards the Torah. Now over here, there's much said about the fact that there are 30 mitzvot b'nei Noach. Rashi already in describing it says, lo mit parshu. I have no idea what these 30 mitzvot are of b'nei Noach. Mehachahu dekal yolif. It's learned over here. This is the source for it. It doesn't come anywhere else. And therefore, I don't have any indication as to what these 30 mitzvot are. The Haggadah Meiron Schoenberg over here points you to a number of sources that have a list of the 30 mitzvot b'nei Noach. And that is in the Sefer Asara Mamarot of Rabbi Nachum Azariah Mipano. Over there he lists out the 30 mitzvot b'nei Noach. I sent it out last night. You can see it. But he basically says is that the 7 mitzvot b'nei Noach are headline mitzvot. They are general categories. And subsumed under those categories are additional items that comprise the 30 mitzvot b'nei Noach. So for instance, when it comes to Avodat Elilim, Avodah Zarah, which is one of the Sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach, he says subsumed under that is Avodah Zarah, Mavir Be'esh, Koseim, Me'onei, Minechesh, Mechashev, Chover Chover, Ob, Yidoni, Doresh Elameitim. All of those practices are subsumed under that, and that gives you 10 items that you're asur in. And then he goes through, one by one, he goes through all of them. Some of them are interesting, we've seen them in other places, for instance, Shvichat Tamim. Shvichat Tamim has two under that category. One is killing, and then there's a secondary one, which is Soter Lo'o Shel Yisrael. A goy slaps a Jew across the face, that is the equivalent of Shvichut Tamim, and is one of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach that you're not allowed to do such a thing. And similarly, Birkat Hashem, which is Chas V'Shalom being Mikalel Hashem, which is one of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, subsumed under there is not only Kvod Hashem, but Kvod HaTorah, like we mentioned over here. So he collects through Shas all the different times that the Chazal discuss mitzvot that are belonging to B'nai Noach. Even in Sanhedrin, when they discuss the Sheva mitzvot B'nai Noach, there seems to be more than just 7. There are additional items, like the problems of Sirus, Tilayim, other mitzvot, which are not mentioned amongst the 7 that are added. So he subsumes all of those in the category of 7. And then he gets to a count of 30 mitzvot. In discussing that, he asks a question on our Gemara as well as on his list over here, which is the problem of nevela. The Torah says that when it comes to the nevela, you can, like, makortim kareno lenachri, you're allowed to sell it to a goy. So there the Torah is saying that you can sell the nevela to a goy, even though a goy technically can't eat a nevela based on these 30 mitzvot of Bnei Noach, based on what the Gemara is saying over here. He says about that, elahutru lahem, it was released to them, batitin liten et adin, and they're going to pay a price for that. Kamish avar vishana, just like someone who is a repeat violator, or maybe it was that it was released and they're no longer bound by it, but they only get the mitzvah as someone who's in a mitzvah if they keep it. So it still exists in its form if they voluntarily want to deal with it, but it's not necessarily a mandatory mitzvah. So he's trying to deal with this complexity of the Eastern Nevela versus that which the Torah says. And then if you look in the Breishit Rabbah, as well as in Yushalmi, the Yafei Toar, Rabbi Shmuel Yafa ben Yitzchak Ashkenazi, over there tries to also deal with this issue of the 30 mitzvot. And he each time says, I'm not sure what the source of these 30 mitzvot are. Because we have a principle that you're not allowed to be mechadesh, new mitzvot. So how do these 30 mitzvot of Bnei Noach come about? He says, the things that nechatvei didn't come shum chidush, that they had them originally, but they didn't keep them. Mashiach comes to teach them, he's going to teach them the 30 mitzvot. Where do these 30 mitzvot come from? If it's amongst the tayyag mitzvot of Jews, you never find one of these, for instance, writing ketubah for a homosexual relationship. That's certainly not among the tayyag mitzvot. So how can you claim that their 30 are coming from the tayyag mitzvot? And also, shlo lishkol basara meit makulin. That's also the filibitzinasi rate. Cannibalism or eating a vela is asur not only in the public sphere, it's also asur bitzina. If it's dealing with mitzvot that are particular to them, everywhere else in Shas, we find that there's Sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach. So why are you dealing with 30 over here? And what's the big deal that they don't write a ketubah for Zicharim? Homosexuality is arayot, and arayot are restricted to b'nei Noach. maybe I have to say Shema'atzman kiblu alehem lekayim lamed mitzvot, that they had a social contract to keep these 33 mitzvot, to add on above and beyond their 7 mitzvot until they reached 30. So there are these 30 basic principles which they accepted. They're voluntary types of social contracts that they entered into, and these were what they kept. And now they don't keep any of those that they agreed to keep except 3 of them. So out of those 30, 7 are the core 7 mitzvah b'nei noach. They're an additional 23. Out of those additional 23, 3 of them are still mentioned over here, which they keep, even though, again, they are not mitzvot b'nei noach. They're not in the tayyag mitzvot. They are some social contract amongst the goyim. So just interesting in terms of dealing with the 30 mitzvot b'nei noach, when we know there are only 7 mitzvot b'nei noach. How do you deal with that? We saw the Rav Nachman Zayir Mipano tries to subsume under the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach all the 30 based on Shitot of Tanaim and Amoraim all over Shas that bring things that are asur to non-Jews. And then you have the view of the fake Toar, which is that these were voluntary acceptances by them, some sort of social contract of 23 additional items up above and beyond the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, of which they only keep 3 of them. Right now, back to Gidin Asher. The Mishnah says, Ve'enu Noeg Ba'ov. And when it comes to Gidin Asher, it's not applicable to birds. Ba'kaka Chazina De'idle. The problem is that if you open up the legs of the birds, they also have a sciatic nerve. So why is it that Gidin Asher is not applicable to birds if they have a sciatic nerve? So the Gemara answers, there's a difference between the sciatic nerve of animals and the sciatic nerve of the fowl. And that is because itle v'lo agyo. The birds or the fowl have a gidin asher sciatic nerve, but the flesh that sits on top of it is not convex. But on the other hand, the flesh of the behema, or even of human beings, that sits on top of the sciatic nerve is actually convex. So you have here, if you look in Sichot Kulin, you take a peek, if you look at it from a slice, cross-section of the animal, it's dealing with the inner side of the leg. So on the inner side of the leg, along the koliat bone, which is the upper bone, if you remember we discussed in the animals, there were 3 bones that were the structure of the leg, speaking about the uppermost bone around which the sciatic nerve comes down. And that bone that comes down, the basar that is on the inside of that bone, meaning that the part that's facing the other leg, is rounded and bulges. Rashi describes over here a kaf like a spoon, which has a bulge in it, it's convex in its protrusion outward. And you can see that if you take a slice of the animal looking down from on top, you can see the inside of the legs of the animal, they have this rounded area that sits on top of the sciatic nerve, so there's a rounding on the inside of the thighs, and that's what it's referencing to. The other hand, by the fowl, the sciatic nerves that come out from them, to the legs. If you pull their legs apart, you stretch out their legs, you see that the basar that's around them is very flat and straight. It doesn't have that bulge that is on the animal or in a human being, bulge of flesh that sits on top of the sciatic nerve. And that's the difference between them. Then the Gemara says, what happens if you have anomalies? Which is, by Rabbi Irmia, idle lo'of agil, what happens if you have a bird that does have this convex flesh on it? Or itle the behema below agil. Or you have an animal where the sciatic nerve is there, but it doesn't have that bulge. You can see here again. So internally, there's no bulging basar as opposed to what's normal. Over here, it's very open between the legs. There's a lot of space instead of at the top of the thighs where the thighs come close together because of that bulge that sits on the sciatic nerve. Or on the fowl, you have a case where there's a bulge around the sciatic nerve. What's the din in that case? Bulge di de aslinan. Do we look at each individual animal and make a decision? Or do we look at the species? Meaning that, are these anomalous animals, is it a local question on each animal, and then we have to look at each one? Or is this a broad description of how to deal with this? Once we've established that the animals have it and the birds don't have it, then it doesn't matter if a bird does have it or an animal doesn't have it, it has to do with the min. Marley says the take was an unresolved issue, which obviously then we would go the chumrah and force you to remove it, in either of those cases. Noeg b'shalio. Gidin asher is applicable to a fetus. Amar Shmuel v'cholbo mutar l'divrei Yaakov. The fats that are normally asur in a fetus are mutar. Where it says, cholbo demai. Which fats are you speaking about which there is no machloket? Because, ilema d'shalio, If you're speaking about a fetus, miflag pligebe, don't they argue about this? This was the machloket that we had before between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. The Tanya, noeg b'shalil, v'chelbo asur. That gidon asher applies to a fetus, and the fats are asur, divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, noeg b'shalil, it doesn't apply to a shalil, meaning gidon asher, v'chelbo mutar. And the chelav is mutar, meaning that they're consistent in their positions. That by a fetus, is it yes, asur, and a yes, asur means both the gidon asher and the chelav? Or is it mutar? That means both the gidon asher and the chelav. You tell me they don't argue about the chelav? They certainly do. Their machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda in this issue is a fetus that's already reached full term and is alive. When you shech the mother and then you open up the mother, it walks out alive, both figuratively and literally, it walks out alive. That ben tishachai, that's where they argue. Balach Rabbi Meir the shitato, Rabbi Yehuda the shitato. And they are consistent in their positions. That's because Rabbi Meir believes if you shech the mother, the ben tishachai is not nitara, you did the shchita of the mother. Because he's too much of an independent life force, and therefore the shchita of the mother is not successful. Given that, it's an independent entity. Independent entity means it's not inside the mother. That's why the gidon asher and the chelav are not nitar, just like the animal itself is not nitar. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opposing opinion, which is, even a ben tishachai is called mikol babehema, everything inside the animal, and it's inside the animal, it's inside the mother. So the shchita of the mother helps. And therefore, everything inside is considered to be yerachimo. It's an extension of the mother, whether it's a gidon asher chelav, it's all mutar. So they are consistent in their opinions, but it's certainly, they argue about this matter. It's not like what Shmuel's saying over here, that there's no argument about the chelav. Ve'la chelbo de gid. They speak about the fat that surrounds the sciatic nerve. Ha miflag plegebat. That they also argue about. The Tanya, we have a braita. Gidon asher mechateta charav. You need to dig after it, b'chol makom shehu. Anywhere it is, you've got to go find it all the way up to the top of the sciatic nerve, b'choteich shmano mi'karo. And then you need to cut off the fats from the base or the root of the fats that are around it, divrei Rabbi Meir. So you see there, Rabbi Meir says, not only is the sciatic nerve problematic, the fats around it are problematic, and when you go to do the nikur to take it out, you need to slice out both the sciatic nerve and the fats that are around it. You need to just cut it off with the shofi, is the part that protrudes. So if you slice it off with the part that protrudes, everything else is mutar. And Rashi up above said that the dome lekaf means kol basar gavoa. Any flesh that extends out or sticks out, ve'agul and circular, is called a kaf. And he brings evidence from the Gemara Nida that in the anatomy of the woman, you also have a kaf that the Gemara describes, which is also a part of basar, something that protrudes outward, that's a round and convex type of basar that sits there. So similarly over here. And then when describing shofi over here, he says, hachelev ha-givoa, the upper fats, v'nirei ala shofi, and it's on that protrusion part, gomamo, you slice that off, umashlicho mipnei maradayin, and you throw it away because of maradayin, so it shouldn't be that it looks like you're eating the gid, because that's the part that extends out. The part that extends out, or the fats that extend out, that's the part that you cut out, because that's something that is taken off with the shofi. With the part that is protruding, that's the part that you take out. But other than that, the remainder of the fats, you do not have to cut out. And even the fats that you are cutting out are only because of maradayin, not because they are asurim. So you see, they argue about the fats of the gid. The Gemara says, "Dolam chelbo de gid." Shmuel's statement is about the fats of the gid. Umode Shmuel de Rabbi Meir mid Rabbanan asur. And Shmuel is telling us that Rabbi Meir Mikaradin thinks the fats are mutar. And it's only mid Rabbanan that they are asurim over here. The Tanya, Ushmano mutar. The fats that surround the gid and asher are mutar. Yisrael kedoshim nagubahel isur. But Bnei Yisrael have a minhag that they voluntarily said that we're not going to eat the fats around the gidon asher. We already saw this earlier. My love, Rabbi Meir. Who's the one that's telling us this position? It must be Rabbi Meir. Damar mutar min haTorah. It's really mutar min haTorah, but surmi derabanan. And that brighter that we brought before, that said by the gidon asher, you slice off all the fats with it, that's a din derabanan. That's not a din d'oraita. And that's what Shmuel says. They both agree, mi d'oraita, that the fats are mutar. The question is, mi derabanan, what you do? According to Rabbi Meir, you gotta remove it. Because that's the minhag Israel to not eat those fats. Therefore, you must remove it. Rabbi Yehuda says the fats are fine, except for the stuff that looks like marat ayin over there. So Mimai, how do you know that's the case? Maybe that which we just brought, this Braita, Dilma Rabbi Yehuda, maybe that's author Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that there's a minhag Yisrael to make it asur. Mar says, but Rabbi Meir, mi deraita nami asur, but maybe according to Rabbi Meir, even in a Torah it's asur. Lo saga that's called, because they have another Braita, the Tanya, Gidan Hashem mechatei tacharav, Gidan Asir, you need to go and dig after it to take it out. Bechol makom shu, wherever it's found, you gotta dig it out and get it out. Ushmano mutar, and the fats are totally mutar. Munch might le dit le chatita. Who's the one in the previous Braita that told us that you gotta go dig after the sciatic nerve all the way up to the top and pull it out? That was Rabbi Meir's position. And even though it's Rabbi Meir's position of chatita, it says over there, mukamar shmono mutar. It says the fats are mutar. That shows you that Rabbi Meir at the Oraita believes that the fats are mutar. That was we saw in the other Braita that was only a din derabbanan or a minhag Israel. And Rabbi Yehuda, who both believes you don't need to go and dig after the sciatic nerve, you just cut off the shofi, the part that's protruding or sticking out by the joint, that's the part you need to take out, and then you just slice away the fats with it at that point, just because of Mayardayin, but otherwise the fats are totally mutar. So he both does not have chatita, and he also doesn't have any isur with the fats, and that's why that can't be Rabbi Yehuda's position, because he thinks the fats are totally mutar, and that's how we now explain Shmuel's statement before, that by Gidin Asher, they argue about the Gidin Asher, the Shalil. The fats, everybody agrees, are mutar midor, right? It's just a question, midor abanan, or midor the minag, whether it is asur. Tosmo points out, from Rashi's explanation of Gomomoma Shofi, it makes it sound like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are just arguing about where the Gid is. Once you determine what their Gid is, then the Chelev has to come off with that Gid. Rabbi Meir thinks the Gid goes up much higher, you have to be Chotet after it. And then all the fats that's surrounding it, you need to take out. Rabbi Yehuda just says, Gomomoy Mashofi, that part that extends out, that's where you need to slice it off. Both the Gid at that point and the Chalev. But that would sound like for both of them, the Chalev has to be taken out. It's just a question of where you think the Gid is, that will then extend to the Chalev as well. But he says, Avalon Hashon Kasheh, says that the Gemara's language doesn't seem to really corroborate this. The Gemara says that they're arguing about the Chalbo, the Gid. They're arguing about the fats of the Gid, and not about the Gid itself, or the fact that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that any of the Chelev of the Gid should be taken off. And therefore, he says, Lekach Nire. He says, I think the better explanation over here is, the Gomomo Gid Luchudei. The Gomomo of Rabbi Yehuda means to take out the Gid and not the fats. The reason they wanted to set up the Braita like Rabbi Yehuda, even though he doesn't think any of the fats are Asurim, is because it's Toluei B'minag. And the fact is that the Gid is Asur, but the Chalev is really just a question of whether it was a minhag to be Oser or not to be Oser. And if Rabbi Yehuda thinks that there's a minhag, Rabbi Yehuda could have been the author of that Braita, just that he thinks the Gid is problematic min Torah. The Chalev is Asur, mitzad minhag. And he could fit into that, even though he doesn't think any of the Chalev is problematic. So in this way, Baal Yitzchak would argue on Rashi and say that Rabbi Yehuda's position, when he says to cut it off, means literally just to cut off the sciatic nerve, not to cut off the fats, whereas Rashi thinks that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you gotta take off the sciatic nerve and the fats along with it because of the problem of Marat Ayin. And Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta Marav. Lo asra Torah, ela kenokanot shebo. This is a word we saw in the Amud Aleph, which is the Torah only was oser the tendrils, which are the nerve extensions or nerve fibers that come off the sciatic nerve. And that's because the sciatic nerve itself is a piece of wood. It's so hard and so difficult to eat that nobody would eat it. It's Eitz Ba'alma. So if it's Eitz Ba'alma, the Torah must be Oser something that is not the sciatic nerve or that is edible. So that he suggests it's the fibrous nerves that come off the sciatic nerve. Those are Kenoknokot, the tendrils. That is what is Asur. The sciatic nerve itself is not Asur. It's just all these little nerve endings that come off of the sciatic nerve. Those are Asurim. Ulamar Eitzu, but Torah Chivalav, Enochanami. It is an Eitz, but that's what the Torah said is Asur. It calls it the Gidin Asher, means the Gidin Asher, and therefore the Gidin Asher is Asur. The implication of that might also be the reverse, which is, if the sciatic nerve is Asur, the fibrous nerves that stay extend from it are not Asurim, because you're not looking for something to make Asur, we have what is Asur already. Tosfo points out that Rav and Ula's argument over here is not necessarily parallel with the machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda before of Chatita or Gomomoi Mashofi, as well as it's not necessarily connected to machloket we're going to see further on, as to whether Gidin Asher has been Otein Tam or not been Otein Tam. He says Rav clearly believes that Git is benotein tam. That's why he rejects it being the sciatic nerve. It says it has to be the nerve fibers because it has to be something that is notein tam. On the other hand, he says Ula says that that machloket as to whether you have to cut it out, chatzita, gomoi mashofi, as well as the machloket about notein tam and ain't notein tam, is about the main sciatic nerve. And Rav says that they're arguing about the kanuna kot. Clear, Rav believes that notein tam is essential because that's why he says that the sciatic nerve is not the problem. So Rabbi, kavate de Ula mistavra. Ula's position makes more sense. Dam Rav Sheshet, Amar Rav Asi, because Rav Sheshet says, in the name of Asi, Chutin Shebechelev, the veins that are in the fats, Asurim, you're not allowed to eat them, Vein Chayvin Alein, Karet, you would not be Chayav Karet for them if you ate them. Chelev, if you eat, you're Chayav Karet for. If you eat the veins, there's no Chayav Karet. But the veins are embedded inside the Chelev, so we tell you not to eat the veins that are embedded inside the Chelev. That's a sur, but not a sur like chelev. They're not really chelev. Alma, chelev amar rachmano. When the Torah says chelev is a sur, it means chelev elo chutin, and not the veins that are inside of the chelev. Even though they're totally embedded inside of it, and they are edible parts of it, it still doesn't mean the veins. Hachanami, git amar rachmano, elo knokanot. And also over here, the Torah says the git is a sur. Git means git, and not tendrils, and not the nerve fibers that are coming off of it. Because that's not what the Torah said. When the Torah says something, it means what it said, and not something else that's embedded in it, or something that's a small item that's extending from it. And so therefore, the shita of Ula makes more sense, that what is asur is the sciatic nerve, and not that which extends from the sciatic nerve. Tosfot quotes from the shilta of the Rav Achai Gaon, that even though over here the Gemara says, kavatei de Ula mistavra according to Abaye, he says that we are choshesh for the kanuna kot midrabanan, but that implies that Ula himself believes that the kanuna kot, the nerve-ending fibers, are clearly fine. It's only the gid and hasheh. We're choshesh for that shita of Rav as well, so we don't only take out the main nerve line, we also take out these fibrous nerves that extend from it. Gufa, amar Rav Sheshet, amar Rav Asi. Chutin shebechelev asurim. The veins that are embedded in the fats are asurim, ve'in chayvin alem, you don't get karet from them, they're not considered to be chelev. Shebekulya. The veins in the kidneys, asurim, vein chayvin alayim, and you're not asur for them. Lovin kulya, the white part of the kidneys, the calyces, those calyces have white fat that is around them. That fat, is that considered to be chaylev, or is that considered to be the fat of the kidneys, and it's not problematic? Because, Rabbi Chiyah, we have machloket tanaim about this. Chad asar, v'chad shari. One of them said mutar, one of them said asur. Rabba mimar teitle. So Rabba, based on this, was choshesh for this, and he used to carve out the entire white area of the kidney before eating the kidney. So he would slice into the calyx and take that whole piece out with the whole white part of it, because he was worried about the fats that were in there. Rabbi Yochanan, similarly, mimar teitle. Rabbi Asi, which is not the same as the Rav Asi that we mentioned before, because here we have Rabbi Asi, who's in Eretz Yisrael. The other one was Rav Asi, who's connected to Rav in Bavel. This Rabbi Asi, who's connected to Rabbi Yochanan, goyimle. He used to just take off the outside piece, and then he would eat the remainder. He would only slice off the white that was outside of the kidney itself, not that which was in what's called the charitz, the calyces. He would leave that part of fat in, and he would eat it, because he didn't think it was a problem. Amar Abaye, kavati de Rabbi Asi mistavra. Abaye is similar to what he did with Ula, says that which Rabbi Asi says makes sense. Damar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Chelev Shabasar Chufe Oto Mutar. If you have fats that are surrounded by flesh, that's not Chelev that is Asur. Alma, when the Torah says to you that the Chelev Al Ksalim Arachmana, the Lo Shibitocha Ksalim, it means that the Chelev that's on top of the loins, not the Chelev that is inside of the loins. So that means fat that's outside is what's problematic. Fat that's in between layers of basar is not problematic. Hochanami, so too by the kidneys. Sha'ala klayot, the chelev ala klayot, amar rachmana is problematic. That means on top, on the surface of the kidneys. Velo shebetocha klayot, but not the fat that is internal to the kidneys. So Abaye, in creating a consistency here, says that in all of these cases, when we're speaking about something that is a sore, it is that item, and not extensions, and not things that are inside. When you say the Gid and Hasheh is asur, means the gid and hasheh, and not the nerve fibers that extend. We say chelev is asur, you mean the chelev, and not the chutim, not the veins inside. And also it means the chelev that's on the ksalim, not the chelev that's embedded between the basar. And thirdly, with the kidneys, the chelev on the kidneys is problematic, not the chelev that's internal to the kidneys that's problematic. And that's why Abaye is supportive of both Ula and Rabbi Yossi's opinions over here, because he sees them as being consistent with this idea that we take literally that which the Torah says. Rashi over here then goes through a detailed description of the fats of the animal as to which fats would be mutar. And he says, "Betachad oto krum av yesh chelev." He speaks about the loins. If you take, again, a slice of an animal, a cross-section of the animal, you can see, and here again in Sichat Chulin, he has a picture of it, you can see layers of flesh and layers of fat that are around. And Rashi says, with regards to the fat of the ksalim, he says, chelev shel ksalim shetachar haklayot, the chelev that's on the ksalim, that's under the klayot, v'nire b'gova haksalim. You can see it all the way on top. That's where you can see the chelev she'al haksalim. That's the chelev that's on top. V'achar kach nivla tachar habatsar adom. As it starts to descend down the side of the animal, it gets covered by basar adom, meaning flesh. So there's flesh that's covering it, because at the top, it's totally exposed. And then as it begins to descend, it goes under the basar adom. It goes under flesh. And then it starts to spread out underneath the ksalim. It starts to widen out and go down the sides. Once the basar already covers it up, mutar, you can eat that fat, because now it's covered by basar. At the bottom, that basar ends. And then afterwards, there's this thick membrane. So Rashi says the parts of the chelev that are problematic are the parts all the way at the top, which are by the ksalim that are exposed. Once they get below the basar is covering it all the way down the sides, that is totally fine. But the stuff that's internal, all the way internal, which is this membrane that's internal, the fats that sit on that membrane internally, that's also considered to be chelev. Because that is not chufem of basar. That's not embedded in the basar between the layers of the basar. So that chelev is asur. And then Rashi has a suffix about the basar all the way at the bottom. And that is, under that thick membrane, there is fats. And some people are knowing the isur and that chelev, because that thin layer is not considered to be a chibui basar. Shidaku, because it's very thin. So over here, towards the bottom, the underbelly of the animal, the basar that has made the chelev mutar until now, because it's now got basar on both sides, it thins out. It becomes a very, very thin layer down below. So it says, despite that fact, in Eretz Ashkenaz, in the places where I am, noagim bo heter. They think that it's totally fine, and that's what I believe. I believe that it's a full-fledged covering, and therefore any of the chelev that's considered below it, and is then trapped between the flesh on both sides, would be fine. On the other hand, he says, with regards to the whiteness of the kidneys into the charitz, into the calyces, haleich achar machmir l'sharei shacharav. It's better to go and dig it out completely and remove it. Because we never see the Gemara pasuk in the local of Rabbi Yossi, even though Abaye seems to favor his opinion, nevertheless the Gemara never is conclusive, and therefore v'amachmir yachmir, whoever is machmir should be machmir, v'moneya lo hifsid. And one who doesn't do it or holds back hasn't lost, meaning that there's basis for both opinions over here, although he thinks that we should favor the opinion of the Hachmir, since the Gemara is not conclusive about this. Tosfot, on the other hand, says it's very clear from here that if Abaye is favoring that position of Rabbi Yossi, the halacha should be like Rabbi Yossi. And he says even Rashi himself says, HaMeikel lo hifsid. If you're Meikel, you don't lose out anything. And in the She'ultot, he brings the Divrei HaMatir, not the Divrei Oser. So he shows that there should be overwhelming evidence to the fact that the halacha is that way, and that should be our practice. But then he says, I'm not sure I really understand what Rashi's doing over here, because Rashi, with regards to the chelev sha'al ksalim, when it dealt with the chelev that's on the ksalim and not between the basar, and Rashi over there says, I agree with that psak, and I paskin that way, lukula, even about that piece in the underbelly, which has a thin layer of basar, or a krum that goes between them, I say that that chelev is mutar, and yet by the kulya, he wants to go to chumrah and say they got to take everything out. Why is he accepting one of these piskei halacha and not the other? And that's what the Baal Tos would say, v'tzarech l'tein tam, ma'ishna zeh mizeh. Why are they any different than Rashi has a different psak? So Tosfot leaves that as a question mark. And then he moves over to Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, who said that when it comes to the fat, Sayuteret ala Kaved, it says even after you remove that thin layer of fat, that the Shuman on the Yoteret ala Kaved is also a sur, even after you've taken that layer off on the top of it, because that's what goes on the Mizbeach. And the Torah prescribes that which goes on the Mizbeach is a sur for you to eat. And therefore he says that based on that, that chalev that's al yoteret ala kaved, or what Tosfos calling shuman, because he thinks it's mutar, because it's not something that is al hakaved, it's something that is in between the layers of basar, and should be mutar. So the Baal HaTosfos would say, our Gemara is a proof against him. Because over here, by the kulia, by the kidneys, it also says that the fats that are on the kidneys are problematic. That which is internal or inside the kidneys is fine. Even though in the Migdash, they put the entire kidney with all the fats on the Mizbeach. So you see that just because you put on the Mizbeach, is not clear evidence of the fact that those fats are asurot. The Tosfos says, the kach nirali, it's only the chalev, it's right on the wall of the Yoteret HaKaved, that's similar to other chalev, that is what is asur. It's because maybe even this peels off about the chalev of the Yoteret itself, and the white of the kidneys by the chalices, the shuman aliyah, and the fats of the aliyah, that look nothing like chalev, because they're mixed in with the basar, they are not asurim, and they're not put on the mizbeach as chalev. So those fats only end up on the mizbeach, agav Yoteret, the kuliyah aliyah, as ancillary to the tail, and therefore the tail fats go to the kidneys, so the kidney fats go, and the Yoteret, which goes on the Mizbeach, all these items that go on the Mizbeach, the fats that are ancillary to them go with them, but not because they're considered chalef, but because they're considered a part of that part that is going on the Mizbeach. But if you can separate them away from that part, they're not real chalef, and you can eat them, and he uses our Gemara over here to dismiss that position of Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph.